I'm not an ordinary preacher, and I was raised, when we were little, we were heathens. I don't have religious structures, and I've only learned a few manners by being married by a man who was raised in church. I don't know how to, you know, to have, you know, religious structures, but I talked at my pastor, Gatabia's church, and I was telling them how much I love the scripture in Matthew chapter 25, where people were given talents. And then when Jesus came, you know, the owner came to ask them, how much did you multiply? The one who had not multiplied anything, Jesus said that he was called wicked. That puts a lot of fear in me. Because they said, what did you produce with what I gave you? And he said, I hid it. I did not produce anything. And that person was called wicked and lazy, which puts a lot of fear. Because in you, you are the only one who knows what God gave you. In fact, nobody knows. But you do know. You know what God has given you. You know what your talents are. And when Jesus comes back and asks you, Dr. Lydian, what did you do with the talents? I want the interest that you produce with the talents. Now, I can't say, oh, I was just a wife. Oh, I was a grandmother. I was running after my grandchildren, which is part of it. But I really have to show what I did with what God has put within me. Now, some of these things, we know them from the start, from very, very early. It is amazing that I'm a teacher. I was never meant to be a teacher anyway at the beginning because my parents had 12 children. I'm the 12th, the middle children. By the time I came along and others behind me, my parents were so exhausted of raising kids. So you know how they would look for relatives and they take you there. It's not that they don't want you, they just want help. Take that one and keep them for a time. So at least they can be able to feed these 10 or whatever number. So I was taken to my grandmother as one of those that needed, you know, help. And my grandmother was old. So she asked my auntie, who was behind my mother, whether I could go stay with her because she had children. We can travel to school together. So we went to school together. And one time, the teacher sent me away because I didn't have a pencil. And I want you to note how something that scars you is part of your destiny. It shows you the direction to which you are supposed to go. I wanted to go to school so bad. But the teacher said, go home. You don't have a pencil here. Go. So I went to my auntie and said, I've been sent away from school because I don't have a pencil. And my auntie did not care much about school. So she said, you and, you know, her son, you can be collecting eggs. You know, the small shiagas, they were really little. You go crawl and collect eggs and bring them to whatever. After collecting eggs for 3-4 days, I was so furious. And now I'm really far. It is in Gatundu. My parents are in Rimuru. Nobody knows what is going on in my life. And I just got so angry. I want to go to school really bad. And I can't go. And I can't even tell my dad or my mom. They are nowhere to be found. So one day, her husband who lived in Nairobi came visiting. He said, Nyambura, what are you doing here? I said, I was sent away from school because I didn't have a pencil. So he said, okay, I'll buy you a pencil. Here is a pencil. Go back to school. That man, 2 years ago, we went there to thank him. I told him, you bought me my pencil. Every morning I talk about pencils, I really can connect God. You got to see the big picture. I'm going to talk a little bit about my book, and then we are going to wind up on looking at the big picture. Because if you don't see the big picture and think about your small incident in isolation, you are not going to finish well. We're going to talk about finishing well. So I went to school and then something happened and for some reason I was taken back to my parents. So just the way you see me talk, I was talking like that. I made sure the whole family knew I had not gone to school because I didn't have a pencil. Everybody I saw, I told daddy I did not go to school. I didn't have no. Everybody who came, I told them. Now, extended family, everybody knew. So that is how I became a writer. To start with, globally, I told people what was going on. My daddy was so angry. Not angry, but he felt guilty because he felt like it's because he couldn't provide. That is why some of us had been detained a little with the relatives. And he decided no one in my family will ever leave his household. Even when my older sisters got married, we could not even go spend the night at their place. We had to go visit and come back home. Because he could not deal with the fact that I had written up fire in the family because of a pencil. Now that I teach kids and I talk a lot about pencils, I can see why the pencil was a scar within me, because it was linked to Georgia State. Can you imagine? From Gatodo to here. Then that last year but one, we went to that school where the teacher sent me away. I told my husband, I'm going to look for that teacher. I'm going to buy him a suit. I'm going to challenge the teachers. I'm going to do whatever. So we went, and I'm going to carry them a lot of supplies. I bought them American supplies. So we went to the school. I told them, you don't know me. This is Gatodo. I was in this school. I told the headmaster what was going on. He called for an assembly for the whole school. Everything stopped, and I had time to address the whole school. But then one of the assistant principal used to be my classmate. So we could connect because she knew some of my relatives there. So I said, I came here because somebody sent me away because I didn't have a pencil. I want to meet that teacher so that I can give him a treat. Then the lady recognized and said, oh, yeah, Mr. Mwagi, he has sent so many people away for pencils. And unfortunately, he died, you know, like last year or something like that. So he's not here, but they knew. That particular time, the whole school, eighth grade, had been sent away for geometrical sets. They were not there. I told the teachers, I can't believe you are doing the same thing that you did to me, because the eighth graders are not here. We said, we are buying everything you need. Get them back to school. And then the school, there is, you know, you've heard the people saying schools are closing because there's no population. Half of that school is closed. The buildings were empty, and that when the reality dawned on me. The supplies, we took them. They could not even use a quora. We left them with the principal to be giving out. But what am I saying? I want you to think about the big picture of your life. Because from here, we are going to go all the way. And I want you to try and connect what your talents are from very, very early. Teaching was my talent. Talking was my talent. Sometimes I wasn't always talking what I was supposed to do because I put people in trouble, and I'm still doing it somehow. But your destiny started very early. That's why God would tell Jeremiah, I knew you before I existed somewhere. And then in my home, I'm hoping I'll be able to cover everything. In my home, we had a Kalitro path where you go to the toilet. You know how you go to the pit latrine? So you have a path where you would take the lantern and go to whatever. I would stand on that path during the day and look at my neighbor's home. He was a DO, and I was 7 years old. Maybe Mama has had me tell this story. And I would stand there and say, I wish I was born in that home so that I can be eating bread for breakfast. And the other day, I was at Walmart shopping for I wanted to buy bread, and the Lord brought that memory and the picture where I used to stand. I started crying at Walmart. I didn't even buy bread. Because at that moment, the Lord said, it's not that I was denying you bread, but I wanted you to go to a place where you can be sensitive. My husband and I feed refugees in Atlanta. And we do it over the weekend. That is our, we work in the secular place. But then over the weekend, we have a big ministry. And a lot of people will call me and tell me, oh, I don't have this, I don't have the other. But then the sensitivity to feed the hungry, to reach out to people who are not even Kenyans, to feel the need, would not have been there if I hadn't cried for bread. I don't know, there is a guy that is from West Africa. That guy, for some reason, things went wrong. He was educated and learned, and he was one of the homeless guys that we used to feed. But he was in a very bad neighborhood, to where I tell my husband, if you are not there, unless Philip takes me, I can't go there. It is not an area a female would just venture in Atlanta. So this guy, one time, sometimes we do distribution and they are still needy people and we have ran out of food. So one day we decided, okay, once we run out of food, so and so, we just go to either Kroger or whatever, we buy groceries and we take to them. And one day we just took them groceries and he said, this morning I prayed for a gallon of milk. How did you know I prayed for milk? And it broke me. Because to him, here is an angel who brought milk. To me, a gallon of milk does not mean anything. But all these things are connected. I want you to see the weave of God so that you stop thinking small. You don't think small in isolation. Oh, this is happening. There is something God is doing with all the little messes in your life, or the troubles, or the whatever. And all these things are supposed to help you discover what your talents are. Sometimes they are not explicit things. They are just things that happen in your life. So that you can, then God when asks you, what did you do with what I gave you? You will be able to produce. Let me talk a little bit about my book. I told Patricia, if I'm not going to speak, I don't go to talk about to sell my book. I'm a very good business person. I can convince all of you to buy these books. It is not a problem to me. But I also totally understand God's assignment for me. And I was telling them, when we were coming on the plane, a lady standing in front of me was a diplomat. But the line opened, and the other people said, oh, you can come. She looked at me and said, you brought us good luck. I didn't know why she said that, because we hadn't spoken. Then I responded back. I don't know what I told her, but she detected my accent. So she said, where are you from? And the conversation started there. Then she told me, do you know Wangari Maathai? I was sent by my government to go work with Mother. We started talking. And from her look, I could tell there is only one catch I could use to get this. My husband suggested maybe we should give her your book. I told her, I'm a breast cancer survivor. And now I got her attention. Sometimes, you know, we got to be wise. You don't just go saying, Jesus, everywhere, making people think you are goofy. Because if people think you are goofy, they're not going to listen to you. She said, really? Yeah. And I would like to share my book with you. And also, I'm an educator. So she got really interested. So we pulled the book and gave her. She quickly read behind about the author. She quickly read. She asked me, are you a citizen? She wanted to find out how I can be a citizen. I said, I am an American citizen. I said, why do you say that? She said, because we need you. We need you here in America. I said, you got me. I am one of you. But then, this is how we catch people. I could tell because we talked a little bit along the way. Tell me about the elections that I can talk about Hillary and Trump. That way, because she worked at the office of the president, I could tell she's not so much church bent. But by the time we finished, she said, here is my card, and I really want to keep in touch with me. I told her, I will, and I give you just a few days to read my book so that we can discuss it. Now, this is the way you give God to people. And I was telling them a story. That's Thursday. There are two tycoons in Atlanta. They own a Marietta Diner chain. Two very rich gentlemen. One of them is my friend. He's called Eddie. So after I gave him my book, we go there, we joke. You know, you can have a disposition. People like talking to you. He liked talking to me for no reason. So I told him, Eddie, I have a gift for you in December. It's coming for Christmas. He said, what gift? You know, these rich people are there. What can a little woman like you bring here? What gift? So I said, Eddie, I'm going to bring you my book. So I took Eddie the book, And for some reason, people want love. Eddie was so happy, you would have thought I've given him $1 million. So I told Eddie, read the book. How long do you want me to come for a review? He said, give me 3 weeks. Eddie read the book. So last Saturday, we talked much about it. I went for the review. I said, Eddie, what did you think? He said, I've read so many books, but you make the message believable. And all of us need that energy. He calls God energy. I said, whatever you call him, we need him. So last Saturday, he saw me, and Eddie was very excited. He said, somebody needs your book. I said, who? My partner needs your book. Go get the book. So I got the book for the other tycoon. And I told him, I'm coming for a review. This is how God could use me to send those millionaires to heaven. Don't make yourself small. I may not have the money they have, but I have something they don't have. And if I cannot see it that way, I will just think, oh, I'm just a small woman, I'm a small teacher, a small whatever. You are not small. I want you to reflect and find out the talents God has given you. Because if you are hearing my voice, it would be so sad for Jesus to call you wicked. Not because you went to Hollywood, not because you smoked weed. Just because you sat on your talents. That's a very heavy responsibility. Now, this book here, it's called Treasures in a Fierce Storm. I wanted to give it a title that would catch anybody because everybody goes through treasures. That is storms. That is how Americans relate to it. People from other countries relate to it. It is not Kenyan as such. I needed to give it a catchy title. And with a drawing on it, well, there is a road there that reflects the interstate. The interstate, all of you enter into the interstate and you're going to exit at some point. You don't determine when you enter, neither do you determine when you exit. On this road, there are the motorists. You're not the only one. So let's not be cocky. There are the motorists on this road. When the storm is approaching, don't blame the motorist. Nobody knows where the storm comes from. They can just come from anywhere. Let's just be nice to each other as we travel this road and encourage one another, because the storms can face you. This book, most of the stories I've written here were not new stories, but what brought this book out of me was my diagnosis of breast cancer in 2012. I was a happy camper. I was a responsible citizen. I wasn't hurting. I was just being a responsible person going for checkup. So when I went for checkup, they called me. They said, something is showing in your mammogram, and the rest of it I want you to read here. So I'm like, what? What is that now? I've never heard of anything like that. But after going through it, and I want the ladies who need to have those checkups to be wise, because the Bible asks us to be wise, there's nothing wrong with being checked. If you say, I won't get checked, I have faith. Let me tell you, all of us do. And I was telling the group how annoyed I got when the doctor prescribed sunshine as one of my treatments. I'm like, what? Go sit in the sun for 20 minutes. And I said, I have older sisters. They don't have this problem. He said, they may never have the problem because they have sunshine throughout in Africa. Those of you who are here, just it does no harm to be checked. In fact, people do not refuse to be checked because they have faith. They refuse to be checked because they are fearful. And that is why I had to write something like this, so that you are not very scared, just in case you go and they call you and tell you a story. Now, what gave me the audacity to write the book? Most of us, we come from a culture where we don't talk. We don't say anything. In fact, you're not supposed to talk about private issues like this, and you're supposed to be quiet. I'm going to read notes that I wrote so that I can go quickly. The word cancer is a direct link to death. People look at cancer patients as a gallon of milk with a visible expiration date on it. Those with this view forget that life itself is what qualifies you for death. Not sickness. as long as you are alive, you qualify to die. So please don't label anybody and say, oh, you know, she might die. You know, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I love funny stories. After I wrote this book, now the whole community, Kenyan community, know I had breast cancer. They think I'm going to die. So I have these older people who are looking for husbands, and they're like, can you find me a responsible man who has money in the community? And I know they are thinking, just in case you die, I'm recommending myself. I'm available. I want a man with money, a man who has less responsibilities. And it amuses me because I ask them, where am I going to get you that kind of a man? But I'm not going anywhere. If you think I'm going anywhere and I can recommend my man, you are so wrong. Number two, I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor not because it's a big deal. It wasn't, actually, it doesn't seem like I had anything to myself, but it qualifies me to speak. Once you survive something like this, you live with a lot of freedom. I have freedom. I'm not afraid of anything. You can tell me, oh, I'm going to scare you. Scare me with what? The devil scared me with the ultimate. He threw his best shot and missed. There is nothing left to scare me with. So it gives me a lot of freedom to, if I need to talk, if I need to deal with people's theology, if I need to deal with mindsets, if I need to deal with cultural differences, I'm not very scared. I'm not very scared. There is nothing left to scare me. And number three, I'm not afraid of dying. My exit strategy is in place. Quoting 2 Corinthians 5 and 1, for we know that if our other houses, this tent is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavenlies. So those of you who are like, oh, I'm scared. What are you scared about? Let me tell you, the party is on the other side. Here, there is no party. The party is on the other side. And then I had breast cancer, but breast cancer did not have me. And you're going to read that contradiction in my book. I experienced other blackouts, and I gave a testimony this afternoon of how my being here is really a testimony that makes me not be afraid. A lot of people wonder why I am not afraid. A lot of people think it's because my husband does not beat me up. That's why I'm not afraid. That is not the truth. Not that he beats me up, but that's not the truth. The truth is, when I married this gentleman, the American embassy said, unless you show us a baby, you are not going anywhere. I was a Christian. I was married for 3 weeks. There was no way. We took, you know, title deeds. You know how you all take title deeds? People's bank statements. We had all of them from our families. And they said, we don't want anything from you. You are not going anywhere until you show us a baby that you're going to leave behind, that you can come back. I wasn't going back to do what in Kenya. I'm here to stay. So what happened? We lost all hope. This time, I'm the only kind of good Christian in my family. I had convinced my dad to let me get married. I told him, it'll be fine. It'll be fine, let me get married. I had resigned from TSC because you could not travel outside the country before you resigned from your job. So I'm in this dilemma. I can't even tell my parents what's going on. Neither can I tell my sisters or brothers. I can't. I've resigned. I don't have a job. I don't know where to go. Now, his family was putting pressure. Let him go. He's going to be late for school. So I was like, guy, didn't I say I did not want to get married? What is going to happen? There was no way out until the beauty of belonging to the body of Christ is what brought me out. Because Archbishop Manasseh Kuria, he's an Anglican. Me, I'm not Anglican. I belonged to Dinisha Kroga Roga. That's the one we used to go to. So Manasseh Kuria had a report that in his village, there is a girl who is being told that she must produce a baby to get a visa to go with her husband. And the holy anger gripped Manasseh Kuria. Manasseh Kuria never saw me, did not know me, did not know who I was. He called Ambassador Hampton and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Ambassador, there is this child in my village. She needs to accompany her husband to the U.S. And you have all given her a condition that is impossible for her to meet." Do you know the embassy looked for me everywhere? This is not the first time I started just causing commotion. Commotion I have caused. They looked for me everywhere. The very girl who told me, "You will never go to America," was given my visa to give it to me. And she could not look at me. She could not look at me. She looked down and said, "Have a safe trip." I took my visa and left. When I got here, I thoroughly understood there was something that God needed to do with my life in America. Because there was no way. I'm talking about the big picture. Because if you don't understand some of these things, you will think that life is about you. It is not. So, those are some of the blackouts that I had faced and others that made me understand that God was on my side. And the last one, I have an anchor for my soul. Deuteronomy 30 and 20 says, "That you may love the Lord your God that you may obey his voice, and that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days." That is how I've been able to speak about this openly. The nurse at our school is a breast cancer survivor for 25 years. So we are discussing all these stories about treatments and what have you. And then she learned that I had written the book. She has been hiding. She never wanted anybody to know what she had gone through. She said, "Miss Karaya, what did I hear? You wrote about what? Like, what's wrong with you? How can you write about things that nobody talk about? Girls hide. They don't want anybody to know." I said, out of the whole staff, she is the only one who did not buy my book. In the whole building, everybody read my book, and the person who made them read this book was my gay boss. I'm telling you, let me tell you, God has funny ways of doing things. I knew a few teachers were saved. I took the book to one of the Baptist teachers, and then when you're discussing, my gay boss enters the classroom. And I'm like, "Oh, gosh, I'm going to die." Because the school system had sued the superintendent for using the phrase David and Goliath while trying to explain how the system should move. So I'm like, the superintendent. So we were given an email, "You teachers, watch your language." The superintendent said David and Goliath is in trouble. So now you can imagine this book in the school building. So my gay boss was, see, to the cover page, he said, "Miss Young, what is that? What is that that you're holding?" And she gave me up. "It's Miss Karaya's book." So I'm like, and then I looked at him, I said, "Well, it's a Christian book." Because I wanted now to defend myself early before I get in trouble. So he said, "No, I need to see the book. Let me see the book." So he grabbed the book and looked at the book. And then he said, "I need a book too." Now we know this, you know, he puts even earrings so that we can recognize who he is. I said, "I told you it's a Christian book." He said, "I believe in God too. Go get me my copy." So I got him the copy. And what he did, he went throughout the building because he's the one in charge of literacy. "Have you all seen Miss Karaya's book? I need everybody to go get Miss Karaya's book. We have another among us." That day, almost all the staff came and bought the book. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to sneak in to a few people within the building. So the school nurse did not buy the book because she felt very offended that I had written about something like breast cancer. Why? Because people think that if you have ever been diagnosed with cancer, you can die anytime. So you have no business running your big mouth saying how you had it and how you survived. But the thing is, I have a very different view from her. For me, I have a promise from God. The length of my days is not what matters. Methuselah lived 900 and some years, and he did nothing except wake up, eat, go to bed, wake up. Can you imagine? 100 years, 200 years, 300, 900, almost 1,000 years. So it's not even the length of the time that you stay. It is what you do with your life. You can live. Jesus was here for 33 years, and he changed the course of history. So all these people said, oh, you might die. You're going to die too. If you don't die of cancer, you will die of even nothing. There's a disease called nothing that is going to kill you. So I decided to write this book to reach a lot of people, my American friends, and reach them with the faith. I am shocked when the Americans read it and they come back and say, I need 5 more copies for my friends. I need 10 more copies. And the testimony that really beat me is when a woman was trying to persuade me to buy my book, not knowing me. I had a different hairdo. So I go to this meeting in Atlanta, and this lady had been told to come by the doctor because her daughter was on life support. A pastor in Atlanta had bought the book and given her and given the family. So she found my book in ICU. So she started reading, and her faith started welling up. Her faith welled up. She continued looking at her daughter on life support. She said, no, if God, you can do this for this lady, you can do it for me. So when I find this lady, she started telling me about this book she found in ICU. And the funny thing is the way she was talking about my stories. Now, I don't want to laugh. It was funny, but I also did not want to. I wanted to cry and I wanted to laugh. Because now, I know we have some people who are not Kikuyu. Just excuse me, because she was a Kikuyu. She was now explaining to in Kikuyu. How hard na mutumia? Wa desetune ka mutirido? Gugithi guhithi. So she was really tenacious about it. And then she concluded and said, and I need, there's only one copy in this house, and I'm going to Kenya with it because I have 4 children with a lot of challenges. That is the time I revealed myself. I said, how many copies do you need? I am that woman you're talking about. She said, I need 5 copies. I said, you have them for free. And she wanted me to buy that book so that I could read it. I told my husband, if I don't sell one copy, I've done my job. If nobody buys one copy, my job has been done. You can buy the book. It's easy to read. It is interesting. It makes men cry. Some of the testimonies I hear in Atlanta is that the guys were trying to read and they could not finish because they were crying over some of the things. And I'm like, my intention is not to make you cry, but we were preached about being authentic and very real. And it attracts a lot of people to me because they feel like they can talk to me because I can be real. And because God is real. God will bless you as you read this book and pray for me as I work on my second one, which is as powerful. So much about the book. It's only $15. If you buy 2, you can get 2 for $25 or more for your families. In Atlanta, if you have 5, 6 sisters, I see people buying them so that they can persuade them to go for those kind of checkups. All right, I have enough minutes to finish. This picture here, you know, a teacher always has to have a mental mind. This picture here is about the race that we are running. We are running the race. This guy is in his 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. When you're in your 70, that is when the crown starts becoming very clear. If you live that long, when you start here, Peter wrote this scripture here. It says in 1 Peter 1 and verse 13, therefore, gird up the loins of your minds, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. That scripture there always bothered me. Gird up the loins. Isholishia meshiria. So when I was trying to find out where the meeting came from, these people used to dress up like this. They had clothes that had, loins that were running round. And the reason why Peter wrote that is because they had to get the cloth and tie them comfortably, tuck them well so that they make something like a short then if they have short, they can run. Because you can run, like now, if I was trying to run the way I'm dressed up, I can't. So if my dress had a lot of loins, I would have to gather them and tuck them in and tighten the belt, then make myself comfortable for the race. That is where the scripture was coined from. Gird up the loins of your mind, not of your heart. So your heart does not have loins. It is the mind. When these people are running, I love watching the Olympics, long distance race. When these people are running like this for long distance, there are 10 things that they must have in mind. They must have a vision. They must be resilient because this road is tough. If you can't bounce back, Brother Lucas, you need to be able to bounce back. There are things that are going to, you got to be able to bounce back. You must have focus. You must have strength. You must be prepared. You must have openness of mind. Because a coach can tell you to do something different from what you know. You must trust your coach. You must have humility. You must have passion. And you must be very tenacious to finish this race. Talking about vision, the other day, I went to my eye doctor. I have a problem with one of my eyes. The one I had with the stick when I was 8 years old. So it sent me to my specialist. So this time we are arguing about what to do with the doctor. And the doctor said, Mrs. Karaya, I am not worried about your nearsightedness. I am worried about your farsightedness. Because if you can't see near, I can do something about it. If you can't see far, there is nothing I can do about it. And as he spoke, I forgot about the eyes. Because I started meditating on the weight of that statement. That if you can't see far, there is no help. If you cannot see near, people can fix it. So we agreed with the doctor, then do whatever you need to see, to do. But what he was saying, if I cannot see this far, if my vision cannot focus to see the end, there is no hope. These are the little problems and the races and what have you. God can, these ones we can solve. We can solve about different challenges. But if I don't have a vision of where I am going, there is nobody who is going to help me. Because it is that vision that gives me the focus in the face of difficulties, when I have to climb the hill, in the face of darkness, because sometimes, oh, it's going to be dark, in the face of the valley, because sometimes it's going to be very low, and in the face of another uphill battle, and in going down again. But if I have my mind on the focus, these little things don't worry me. My daughter has a saying. She says, Mama, you really don't care about anything. It is, but what she means, it's like, I'm not scared when something happens. Ooh, what are we going to do? Ooh, what are we going to do? We are KCFA products. And most of you know our children. When our daughter got pregnant, you know, it wasn't anything planned because I didn't call you for a wedding. So, it was a crisis in my family. In fact, one of the pastors came and said later on, I can't believe you did not divorce with your, because of your daughter's pregnancy. And I looked at him and said, why are we to divorce? I'm not pregnant. My husband is not pregnant. Philip is not pregnant. What do you mean that we should have divorced because of the crisis? But when this crisis came, and our daughter had honored us because she had brought that boy to our home and said, you know, we just insisted, go to school. Just the same way we keep insisting. Parents, go to school. Finish school. Finish school. Not knowing that the reason why even the Bible would say younger widows should not be put on the list, they should be allowed to marry, it is because there is a stage when the body is overcome or the body overcomes some of the spiritual tenants that we already know. So when these people are in that stage, the body can be very overcoming. So when our daughter got pregnant, the devil was telling us, or telling me, you need to go hide under the bed and never come out in public again. Because, one, you are a teacher. Two, you are a community leader. We do a lot of things in the community in Atlanta. And everybody knows you. So you need to go hide under the bed and shut up for the rest of your life. And then my husband and I told my husband what I was hearing the devil say, and said, I am not going under the bed. I am not pregnant. I did not do anything. All these accusations the devil is trying to throw at me, I am not buying them. I did not do anything. I am not going under the bed. But what I'm saying, there can be those situations where you feel, okay, where are we going to go? Some of those really up. And when you are up there, you really see a lot of darkness. But then there is a scripture that tells us that God has promised his people to give them treasures of darkness. And when it got really dark, I said, maybe there are going to be a lot of treasures here. I just have to figure out how to harvest the treasures of darkness. And I've learned to do the same. When they said breast cancer, I harvested the treasure of darkness quickly. And I've reached people I could not have reached. When things went the way they went with my daughter, we have two grandsons that make me more happy than probably anything would have made me happy in the world. Treasures of darkness. Treasures of darkness. Treasures. When you come to this valley here, there are also treasures of darkness. Because life is going to present those moments when it is so dark, you can't see your way anywhere. All you can do is trust in God's character and say, he has never done me anything but good. Even these cannot be coming to harm me. It is only that I can't see it. And with my finite mind, I can't see the far. I can't see the far that God is seeing. Now, I make fun with my friends in Atlanta. I tell them, you know what? In Kikuyu, say, you know, okay, kurutuadhu ya netoana. So I tell them, you guys, you have no one to remove your freeze. Me, I am secure. I'm really secure. Because when you see the bigger picture, you will stop being immature. Everything smaller comes. What will people say? People are not even thinking about you anyway. They are very preoccupied with their own problems. There is nobody, let me tell you, there is nobody who has time to think about your problems. People are like, oh, what will people, which people? Those people are swamped in their own darkness. Two minutes and I'm done. I pray that we as KCFA members will see the big picture. The price that is laid for us. All these mountains and valleys are part of God's design to maturing us. It is not that I don't get scared of everything, but, and let me tell you, there are things that could scare me, but I look at it and I'm like, I am so secure in whom I have believed. I am so persuaded that he is able to do anything. The Bible calls him the sovereign God. When people are, oh, the devil is going to do this. Which devil? He's a sovereign God. He's a sovereign God. You should not be scared about anything. May the Lord bless you. I love you all. I wish to see all of you in heaven after we finish well. Not because I'm dying. Those people who are applying, they've lost it. We need to finish well, brethren, because this is what we were called for. I want you to dig into your own self. Find out the things that God has deposited within you. Arise, my brother, so that when we go to God, we will not be told, good and successful servant. It's nothing like that. Because, you know, we are so deceived by this success word and how people measure. God will say, good and faithful. Because sometimes you might even just continue laboring and you don't see a lot of success. My sister, building that church can be such a... But you'll be rewarded, my sister, for your faithfulness. This is not success how people measure. Oh, how many hundreds do you have? How many people do you, whatever? You're not successful because you have this number. We're going to be rewarded for our faithfulness. I want us to pray.